The Politics, Politics, Politics podcast is brought to you, as always, by everybody who supports this show at TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Man, we're really serious about politics. Are you serious about politics? Are you so serious about politics right now? So are we. We take it really seriously. In fact, if you take it $3 a week seriously, you're going to get two extra podcasts. You're going to get one on Monday. You're going to get one on Friday. I'm not going to spill the whole beans, but last Friday's podcast began as an Alex Jones intro, and then there's never let up. It was a fun time. Hey, a couple other things to bring to your attention right now. Number one, if you are in the San Francisco Bay Area, election night, the wave finally crashes, or does it? You can watch all the results live with us as they come in, and we can go over some of the greatest hits of the campaign, the best ads, the best gaffes, all of it. We will tally up the midterms that was at the Wave Watch show at the Piano Fight Theater live, 7 p.m. election night, November 6th. Pretty sure November 6th. Go ahead and get your tickets right now. bit.ly/wavewatch. Again, bit.ly/wavewatch. But enough of talking about how we support the show. What do you say? We just do the damn thing! Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Politics, Politics, Politics podcast coming to you live on January 12th, 2018. My name is Justin Robert Young. Very happy to be with you. Very happy to be here. Did I say January? September 12th. As if I couldn't forget. See, you're allowed to forget September 12th. You're allowed to forget September 10th. It's in the middle where you have to never forget. Okay. Let's go ahead and get into the stories of this week. Weird week. I promised you guys we would have the Dragon Con episode out last week. I'm waiting on that still from the Dragon Con podcast track. We will have it out soon. But we did give you guys, for $3 subscribers, you guys got five podcasts in 5 days last week. Monday, we had an emergency Tuesday. We had an emergency Wednesday. We had emergency Thursday. And then we had the Friday extra. So this is, by comparison, a bit less of a hectic week. And in fact, it's a lot of us still unpacking what went on last week. The big stories: Kavanaugh, the tech hearings, Woodward's book, the New York Times op-ed. These are still what we're talking about. As you know, we had the first initial starter's pistol. Traditionally, campaigns begin on Labor Day. Specifically like campaigns without endless cash, like presidential campaigns do. So we saw the beginning of that. But now begins, you know, primaries are always a lot more fun than general elections. IMO. You know, even our boy Kemp, who's running for governor in Georgia. You know, we had such a fun time. He was being a lunatic. He was pointing guns at children. He was blowing things up, talking about how he's going to round illegals up in my truck. Yeah, I said it. And now his new thing, let's see if we can even bring it up here. You know, it's just, I expected more. He's now pivoting to the center. He doesn't want to seem like a total cuckoo, wacko, nut, job. So instead of pointing guns at his, you know, his daughter's potential suitors, hashtag late, let Jake smash. He's doing boring stuff like this. Here we go. This is the brand new Brian Kemp ad out of Georgia. Do me a favor and put in the comments if you're watching this on YouTube, or email in at what point during this ad you fall asleep.
We've been married 24 years and raised 3 amazing daughters. The one thing consistent in our family is Brian. He's steady as a rock. When Brian decided to run for governor, I told him he was too honest for politics. Turns out, that's what people like about him. Brian's a wonderful husband and a great dad. Take it from me. You give him a chance, he'll make you proud.
I don't know what it says about you when to pivot to the center, you have to not put you on television. I don't know where you're supposed to go with that. So now we're starting to see some stuff. We're starting to deal with some. But you want to know what? I'm not going to lie to you. This is not a strong lineup. We don't have a great list of things. We have Hurricane Florence that's brewing out on the corner of the Carolinas. For all of our Carolina listeners, please stay safe. If you are in flooded areas, please get the fuck out. This is my number one. I grew up in Florida. I understand hurricanes. I'm not going to lie to you. There's a part of me that misses hurricanes. Now living away from it, I don't ask me to explain it. It's just a thing. Whenever hurricanes are hitting, I kind of feel like excited. It's a weird thing. It's a weird adrenaline thing with hurricanes. I did a politics show where we were talking about the London show that I did. I told the story about how much I always love. I remember I have fond memories of Jeb, pre-presidential governor Jeb, would just get more disheveled hour by hour as he would start yelling at residents who had not left their houses. It would start in like full suit, and then by like 3 o'clock in the morning, he would just be, you know, in just unbuttoned white shirt, gigantic pit stains. He's just sweating. Like, it's just, at first it would start very gubernatorial. Everybody, we need you all to understand, we won't be able to offer emergency services if you don't evacuate from these areas. And then by the end of it, he's just sweating bullets, just dripping. He just looks like he's on a meth bender. And he's just, the decorum eventually evaporates. And he's just, get out! Get out right now! What are you doing? What are you doing? We can't, you're gonna die! Please clap for your own safety! So I missed that. But this is not a good thing. The Carolinas don't get hit like Florida. Florida knows how to handle that kind of stuff because it happens so often. It's baked into the culture. The Carolinas get hit with it, but normally it's just a lot of rain. I don't know why this turned into a weather podcast, but that's really the biggest political thing that'll probably happen over the next week. We've had our president inform us that this is both very big and very wet. In fact, it is bigger and wetter than we might think. This is not a turquoise Jeep song. This is a weather event. So please, 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 please take care, guys. Not a joke. If you're in an area that floods in coastal Carolina, get the fuck out. Start driving now. Get a hotel. Everything will be there when you get back. Take the important shit. Back up all your photos to the cloud. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. We'll see what the fallout is going to be. That's a nasty storm, though.
Low-key, though. Just one person who's watched hurricanes his entire life to another.
It's probably going to turn north. They always turn north. Like, this is just the one thing that happens is they always, there's a non-zero chance that this will turn north and not be anything. There's a fairly good, you should prepare. Prepare like it's going to hit you. Non-zero chance it's going to turn north and not be a thing. All right. I told you guys when Donald Trump was elected, I got Donald Trump being elected 100% wrong. Like, I thankfully, I hedged my bets enough that I wasn't, like, among the worst offenders. But I was wrong 150%. But the one thing I told you as soon as Donald Trump was president was that this will absolutely mean that more rich people will run for president. Because by and large, rich people don't like Donald Trump. So, enter the story of today. Jamie Dimon says he could beat Donald Trump in an election. I'm smarter than he is. Written by Hugh Sun of CNBC. We read now. J.P. Morgan Chase Chief Executive Officer Jamie Dimon took a swipe at President Donald Trump, claiming that he could defeat the president in a head-to-head election. I think I could beat Trump, Dimon said Wednesday during an event held at his bank's Park Avenue headquarters in New York. Because I'm as tough as he is, I'm smarter than he is, I would be fine. He could punch me all he wants. It wouldn't work with me. I'd fight right back. Shortly after, Dimon addressed the uproar caused by the comments. I should not have said it. I'm not running for president, the CEO said about an hour after the original exchange. The off-the-cuff outburst proves I wouldn't be a good politician. I get frustrated because I want all sides to come together to solve big problems. Funny thing is that I do think that somebody that is non-traditional might prove to be a better foil for Donald Trump than a regular conventional politician would be. I think that Jamie Dimon would be probably the wrong person to do it. Because the thing that people who hate Donald Trump, I think, constantly get wrong is they don't take his populism seriously. And they don't fundamentally understand why, prior to him running for president, he was well-regarded amongst poor and minority communities. And why, during the election, he consistently turned out, you know, Obama Democrats who voted for Obama because they wanted to believe in hope and change. Donald Trump was a change candidate. The big signal for change, and here's why. Donald Trump is authentically nouveau riche. He is an avatar for what would happen if I got all that money tomorrow. You'd buy a big, gigantic apartment, and you'd make it all gold, and you'd have a gold toilet, and you'd do fancy shit that didn't fucking matter. You would be that, like, blow-it-all-immediately kind of aesthetic. Now, that's the kind of person that doesn't have money, that looks at that and says, I want that, because that's what you think, that's what money looks like. Rich people, real rich people, look at Donald Trump and say, that's gaudy bullshit. I would never do that. I want to be understated. I want to buy a very tasteful ranch home. I wanted to look like, sure, it'll look like I bought everything out of the Sonoma catalog. And yes, we'll have servants' quarters, but otherwise it'll just look like a fancy house. We don't want to flaunt our wealth around. Real rich people know what the worth of banks are. Jamie Dimon runs J.P. Morgan Chase, a gigantic bank. Guess what people who voted for Trump don't like? Banks. Banks are bullshit institutions that only serve to charge me $20 when I don't have money. They are only bullshit institutions that call in loans when I'm trying to build a business. They are bullshit institutions that only serve to oppress those that are trying to make their way up. They offer usurious loans. They are the ones keeping us down. Now, Jamie Dimon also went to say that I made all my money. I didn't get it handed to by my daddy. Which is true. I don't think it plays. I don't think that I worked my way up the ladder shit plays when you are at the top of the financial infrastructure that is the biggest demon on the left and not a friend of the right that is currently in power. The right, the conservative element that currently has the conch is the populist element of the conservative party. So I don't think that Jamie Dimon would necessarily be a force here. But again, rich people want to run for president. Rich people want to run for president. You know, here's another person that ran for president and won. He was an upset too. And that is JC. No, not Jesus Christ. Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter says that Democrats need to not steer off moderates should they hope to win the White House in 2020. This is a story from the AP. Former President Jimmy Carter sees little hope for the U.S. to change its human rights and environmental policies as long as Donald Trump is in the White House. But he has a warning for fellow Democrats looking to oust the current administration. Don't go too far to the left. Quote, independents need to know they can invest their vote in the Democratic Party, Carter said Tuesday during his annual report at his post-presidential center and library in Atlanta, where he offered caution about the political consequences should Democrats move to a very liberal program like universal health care. That's delicate, and Carter acknowledged even contradictory advice coming from the 93-year-old former president, and it underscores the complicated political calculations for Democrats as they prepare for the November midterms and look ahead to the 2020 presidential election. Quote, Rosie and I voted for Bernie Sanders in the past. So, Jimmy Carter, ever the contradictory, says, look, we can't go too far into socialism, and yet that Bernie Sanders has a lot of really good ideas. The living mascot for modern democratic socialism. There's going to come a time where we will open up a theme park and have different lands about the political landscape. We'll have Whig Island. We'll have the Bull Moose Experience. And we will have Democratic Socialism Land. And they're greeting you for photo opportunities at 2, 4, and 6 in the afternoon will be a gigantic felt version of Bernie Sanders. White hair tussled, as it were. And for whatever reason, there will be a very confused Jimmy Carter saying that, no, I do not want to ride Universal Health Care Mountain. But I do want my picture with Bernie Sanders. I don't know what Jimmy Carter. Look, Jimmy Carter has probably made more of his name being a tremendous humanitarian and a Habitat for Humanity spokesperson, a man who gets out there, I think even now at 93, and builds fucking houses for people. I don't know exactly if his political acumen is something that people should necessarily follow. Or at least, obviously, it doesn't seem to be where the party wants to go. The party wants to go further left. The party wants to give big socialist programs a little bit of a spinaroo. They want universal health care. They want caps on the economy. They want tighter financial regulations. Now, whether or not the balance sheet evens out on all that, who knows? But that's where the excitement is going. Although that is the issue that the Democrats need to figure out. And we're going to have enough candidates out there that we are going to try every flavor of this. Do you want full establishment moderate? Do you want full democratic socialist warrior? Do you want some kind of rum raisin flavor in between? I don't know who he would really be talking to with that. Is he talking to a Cory Booker? Is he talking to a Bernie Sanders? Is he saying that, hey, Bernie, you've already established your democratic socialist bona fides. You do not need to go any further to the left. In fact, you can, at this point, pivot more to the center, and your hardcores will still believe in you. No one is going to out-socialist Bernie Sanders at this point. And as we will see a little bit later during our poll dance, there is certainly an argument to say that even in red states, that is a message for which is still resonating. Here's an article that I read that I thought was really interesting, and I would encourage my blue team listeners to read it, despite the fact that this is not the outlet for which I think you would read a lot, nor is it the kind of character that I feel like you would want to read a bio on. But this struck me because it felt very kind of Rolling Stone-y in a place that you normally don't read a kind of Rolling Stone-esque boots on the ground bio. This is from the Weekly Standard. Yes, the musty, blow dust off it Weekly Standard. And it is a column, I guess, by Matt Labash about Sabo. Now, I'm sure the red teamers in our audience will know immediately who Sabo is. But you might know him because he is the guy that does high quality, like the design quality on it is great. Conservative protest vandalism of posters and billboards that satirize and brutally satirize members of the left. So some of his work include during the, let's see if we can bring up a picture of it for everybody watching us on twitch.tv/JustinRYoung or at youtube.com/JustinRobertYoung. He did, this was after the Al Franken debacle that left him out of Congress. He printed out a gigantic Al Franken with his famous boob-grabbing gesture and put it up on an existing billboard for The Greatest Showman, where Zendaya was in full extension on a trapeze act. So it looked like he was inappropriately grabbing Zendaya or grabbing for Zendaya. He's also done a lot of, I think he did one for the Grammys or the Oscars, where he basically pointed out that so many in Hollywood were complicit with Harvey Weinstein. Think what you will about him, and believe you me, if you didn't find him problematic before, you can read this and find him all the more problematic. But what I found interesting about this article was that it did get to some more vulnerable moments of one of the most committed members of the culture war. Specifically, this one idea that I want to drive home. That in everyone's heart, they kind of wish that the culture war was over. They kind of wish that they didn't have to be so mean. They kind of wish that it would be better if we could actually talk to each other. In their heart of hearts, in their quiet moments, even Sabo, the guy who puts this amount of time and effort into not only designing But thinking of the most brutal possible thing that you could say, the meanest possible thing that you could say about somebody. Very oftentimes calling them pedophiles or murderers, right? That those people wish that it takes a toll on them. This is what I got from this article. That there is a moment here. Let me just read the end of this. These are the final paragraphs on this. These days, it isn't necessary for your outrage to be justified. Outrage all by its lonesome will do just fine. Still, it can be a drag on a man. One night, tearing down the Pacific Coast Highway in Sabo's Jeep on her way to dinner, he makes a confession about the burdens of being himself. Quote, it's not easy being mean. It's like I don't want to be Sabo 24/7. One, it's not who I am. Two, to truly be Sabo, I have to be pretty fucking vicious. I don't want to be vicious. It just takes too much out of me. You can't be a daisy and expect to get the kind of attention you may want. People are so damn desensitized these days that you almost have to be brutal. That resonates with people. I don't know why, but it does. I make what I take for a beautifully simple suggestion. How about not being brutal? How about taking people as they come? How about treating ideological adversaries as you'd want to be treated? The golden rule and all that corny stuff that we seem to be deliberately flush from the National Memory Bank. You can disagree with your enemy, but you don't have to slaughter them. Maybe the enemy doesn't even have to be your enemy. Sabo waves me off like a child. For all of his dark nights of the soul, he is certain he knows what needs doing. Quote, I feel comfortable in the battle, and that's going to make me bloody and dirty and callous. I know what you want. You want the good, clean guy to win. And you want to be able to say that you did it following certain standards. And that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, even you don't live up to those standards. It's not that I'm not a nice guy. It's not that I'm not a good guy. But those are ideals. And I gave up those ideals. Sometimes the dirty fighter is the one who's going to win. Now, I don't want to say that this is a kumbaya kind of situation, because I don't necessarily think it is. And I think I've given up on the idea that I want to be some element of you know, moderation in a world of extremes. But I do find it fascinating that all it took was this dude, this columnist, to go down and spend a couple days with this guy. And by the way, this is the Weekly Standard doing a blow-by-blow of a crime. Like, they walk step by step through them putting up a fake billboard about Sacha Baron Cohen's show, Who is America? But then, even then, there's a moment where he's like, "I this hurts me. I don't want to do it. But yet, I have to be this mean. I have to be this mean because we are this desensitized, and the other side is going to be mean no matter what." I don't know where we go from here, but for whatever reason, I found this fascinating. I found this interesting, and I would encourage you guys to read it. Just Google Sabo Weekly Standard. You'll find it. All right. Let's go ahead and talk about the campaign to derail the Kavanaugh appointment. It didn't work. Moving on. The Woodward book is out. And people are starting to read it. And there is a very predictable turn that is being taken on it, at least in my Twitter feed. The left, the blue teamers, that I don't know how many people have read previous Woodward books, like his books about the Obama administration, the books about the Bush administration. Like, they're fairly dry tomes. They've always been, to me, kind of like comparable to ancient history books, where it's just like, there was a guy, he did a thing. He met wits with this person. There was an argument. This person won. The headlines came thusly. I think he looks at himself as a kind of official chronicler. Now, we live in a world where Trump books are their own batches of candy. They're sugar highs for not only the news media, but also the people that hate Trump. And it's followed a fairly predictable pattern. Candy shows up. Nom, 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 nom. Eat the candy. Sugar high. Headlines. Donald Trump's a piece of shit, says new book. Ooh, that's a good sugar high. I love that sugar high. I love that sugar high. Oh, more candy. Trump. New book that calls me a piece of shit is a lie. Oh, fuck Trump. He's so angry about it. He's so angry about it. Yes. More candy. And this is rare candy. You've only got this candy every once in a while. But somebody gets sacrificed. Oh, we throw a Bannon on the pyre. Oh, Sloppy Steve. Holy shit, somebody got fired because of this book. Ah! And then everybody reads the book. And there's no more candy. And it's just kind of a book. And in the case of Fire and Fury and Michael Wolff, it's, got some sourcing problems. It's probably taking a little bit of a artistic license. May or may not have gotten people on the record on their will, right? But Woodward's book is different. Woodward's book, to me, I never expected it to be very gossipy. In fact, I read a thread of somebody live tweeting himself reading the book, and he's like, man, Woodward's got a real boner for people in the Pentagon. Woodward's got a real authoritarian streak in him. He really, really, really likes to laud the people that have been in Washington for fucking ever. Duh. Like, have you read any of this shit before? Like, if anybody read any fucking Woodward book before, of course he does. Who do you think his fucking sources are? He's been in Washington forever. He's known these people forever. He lauds them. That's the authority that he values are the people that he believes have dedicated their lives to public service. Why? Because he has dedicated his life to watching and chronicling people who are in public service. The only thing that I found really amazing about the Woodward book quotes was that I was shocked that fucking, John Kelly went on the record. I was shocked that half these people went on the record. And now they're offering these fucking weak sauce denials of like, I don't believe that Bob Woodward's book accurately describes my time in the White House. Okay. And? Is anything wrong? Is anything untrue? No. I don't believe that Bob Woodward's book accurately describes my time at the White House. Folks, that's what we call a non-denial denial. That is like saying, I don't believe that Bob Woodward's on-the-record, likely taped or emailed quotes from me directly describe the burger I had for lunch. Doesn't matter. If it's wrong, say it's wrong. And if it's really wrong, sue the motherfucker. Like, if these are false quotes, if these didn't happen, you gotta sue that motherfucker. That's why we have laws for it. So get that weak sauce shit out of my face, Gary Cohn and Rob Porter. We know you said all that. We know that you were an on-the-record source. We know that you were angry. You were bitter. You talked that talk, and then that was a wrap. My problem with it is that, you know, you gotta understand these Woodward books for what they are. If you expected them to be bombshells, you're not going to be happy. If you expect them to be fairly dry historical text, you're going to be fairly pleased, as I will be fairly pleased when I read it. I got one more book to get through, and then I'm gonna take cut into my current research and read this book. Because I love that dry shit. I love that fucking, like, one congressman said to the other congressman, and the one congressman actually had a in with the other congressman because of a farm subsidy bill in 1985. Like, I love that stuff. Here's something I want to put on your radar. Drunk Fetus actually asks a fairly good question here in the chat. Why doesn't Woodward just publish all the tapes? For this reason, he wants to protect his sources, even if he knows that the sources got to do a little dance right now, doesn't want to embarrass them. He knows that at some point he's going to have to come back to everybody. Number two, he is a permanent resident. He is a fixture. Bob Woodward, effectively, in Marvel lore, is the Watcher. Like, he is just a dude who is watching shit. So, if he were sued, he would do it. But he doesn't need to play the game in the press. And that's effectively what publishing the tapes would be. He would be saying, oh, you think I'm not credible? Well, listen to you saying these exact same words. Then there's also the kind of meta chess game, right? So let's say, theoretically, that Gary Cohen and Rob Porter went on the record and do think that Donald Trump is a big fucking idiot, right? And so now they are out of the White House, but they are still close to the White House. They hear a lot of stuff. In fact, they probably hear a lot of stuff from other people that are in the White House that think Donald Trump is a big fat fucking idiot. So if you want quotes about how Donald Trump is a big fat fucking idiot, where are you going to first go to get them? Probably Gary Cohen and Rob Porter. But here's the problem. You release the book, you have all these on the record quotes, and you have to understand that they got to push back so they can stay in the orbit. Otherwise, you've effectively burned your sources. So you sit back and you say, well, I'm Bob Woodward. All this shit has been recorded. They can say whatever they want. If they have a real problem with me, they can sue me. And at that point, I will provide any and all necessary information to protect myself from lawsuit. But they ain't gonna. They really just want to protect their stature in orbit. So that's that. Why doesn't he publish all of his tapes? Because it would prevent him writing another book. In short, I want to put this on your radar, PX3Thians. It's coming soon, and I don't know whether or not it will be this year, but I suspect it might. I'm gonna go back to this because Drunk Fetus has a follow-up comment. Said that might have worked 10 years ago, but we are so divided now half the country won't believe anything without proof. Do you think that they believe anything with proof? I mean, aside from demonizing Rob Porter and Gary Cohen, nothing would really change. Besides, half the country already feels like that. And it's not Bob Woodward's opinion to, it's not his job to sway people. It's his job to write. That's what he does. Okay. Donald Trump shuttered the Palestinian Liberation organization office in D.C. this week. I am putting this on your radar because it's going to come fast. But you've seen all the rumblings about this for months now. Donald Trump's going to go hard after a Mideast peace process after the midterms. I think it is actually a fairly smart thing to do. If we look back from now, what have been, with independents, his base, and even some Democrats, the one thing that has been, when it's happening, looked at very positively that Donald Trump has done? Not much. Foreign policy. North Korea. And anything that we have done whenever Donald Trump makes the messes and then cleans them up. He is in the process of making the mess with Israel and the Palestinians. Move the embassy, close down the PLO. So now, if we are going to follow the pattern of behavior, he is going to try and clean it up. Kushner is in charge of this, and he is a two-state solution guy. There have been a couple trial balloons already floated about whether or not the Jordanians would take over, would assume the Palestinian territories and such. So, I'm just telling you right now, this is going to happen after the midterms. And it might take a little bit. But if there is a hint during the Democratic, what Donald Trump wants is for Democratic candidates for president to be belittling the efforts he is making in Israel. Because he wants to be able to say this was Clinton's big thing and he failed. Bush failed because 9/11 happened and the Arab allies were way more important than the Israeli allies during pretty much all of his presidency. Obama didn't even fucking try. I'm going to be the one to do it, and I'm trying right now. I'm offering. I'm trying to make the deal of the century, the deal that nobody else could make. Me, Dealey McDealerson, is going to deal his way to a deal. So we will see where this goes, but I believe this is a Gerbs prediction. A Gerbs prediction that we are going to see efforts on this post-midterm. That's my prediction. Don't write it down. Write it in the sky in gossamer tears. I'll tell you what, though. I mean, we're going to talk about Israeli-Palestinian shit. Might as well unload a little bit. How about we... Man, I'll tell you what. I want to go back home. Yeah! I want to go back home where they do this shit right. Because another big story that we didn't cover this week was that Ron DeSantis, congressman, has stepped down so we can focus on running for governor, which brings us to this, the only way that we study data science.
Get on the floor if you got that booty.
The poll. Dance. This is a Quinnipiac poll for the Florida governor's race, taken from August 30th to September 3rd, with a 785 likely voter sample and a 4.3% margin of error. Coming up first to the stage, he has a lot of free time on his hands now that he has decided it is governor's mansion or bust. your Republican challenger, who swears he won't monkey anything else up. Please give it up. With 47% of the vote, he is Ron DeSantis.
Get on the floor if you got that booty.
But your headliner, proof that the Bernie message plays even in the red state of Florida. Folks, there has not been a Democrat in Tallahassee in this century. 18 years ago. Give it up for the upset kid, Democrat Andrew Gillum, with 50% of the vote. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is DeSantis 47, Gillum 50, a 3-point spread for the Democrats. That is a very, very interesting race. Gillum was not expected to come out of the Democratic primary. He is viewed as to the left. Florida is a state that, again, has been in Republican control for a very, very, very long time. DeSantis shot himself right the fuck in the foot, literally, as soon as he could. As Gillum was, like, making his acceptance speech, DeSantis dropped the, like, a very well-spoken, let's not monkey up the progress shit. Woo! Now, Florida is a very red state. It's interesting that he is polling this far ahead. It would be a shock upset if he won. But let's see. Let's see. Until then, let's get into but your emails. TheYoungAmerican@gmail.com. Again, TheYoungAmerican@gmail.com is where you can send in your emails. Jeff wrote in, the problem I have with Fox News is similar to the problem I have with McDonald's when it's all that you eat. It can be detrimental to your health. When you don't have a balanced news diet and you eat nothing but Hannity, Fox and Friends, and McDoubles with extra cheese for every meal, it results in an unbalanced diet and news pyramid. The difference is that you hate yourself after eating McDonald's, and you hate minorities and Democrats after watching Fox. This summarizes my core problem with Fox, but like many things, it's more a more complex set of grievances. Facts become debatable. Only Democrats get negative coverage. Debunked talking points are reiterated, and my exasperation grows. Now, couple this with the fact that nearly every public television I come across is tuned to Fox, and it's hard to feel much other than frustration. Hospitals, restaurants, hotels, nursing homes, 20-minute oil changes, the gym, the break room at work. These are all the places that come to mind when I think about where Fox is aired. The imbalance in Fox-heavy news diets with family and friends leads to an inability to have meaningful political conversation. The Fox viewers tend to be oblivious to topics that Fox decides aren't worth covering and use dog-whistle buzzwords like deep state and witch hunt. I don't want to argue about the political leanings of Mueller and his 427 angry Democrats. And they don't want to discuss the ramifications of a White House staffer removing documents from the desk of a president. Don't get me wrong. There are responsible Fox viewers out there I even hate watch from time to time. Just like every now and then I want a double cheeseburger meal with no onions and a side of self-disgust. Jeff, thank you so much for writing in, because I feel like we have a moment of understanding before us. I'm going to reread your second paragraph. Facts become debatable. Only Democrats get negative coverage. Debunked talking points are reiterated, and my exasperation grows. Now, couple that with the fact that I'm going to paraphrase here, that there is a monopoly in certain areas on people who only are fed this information. What if I told you, Jeff, that talk radio, AM talk radio, and Fox News from that was built on the idea that every single one of the things you just said are the spark that created those mediums because they felt that every other news outlet was being unfair to them the way that you believe that they are being unfair to Democrats. This is the germ, the seed that grows this entire field. So you are 100% right. 100% right when you say that facts are debatable, only Democrats get negative coverage, debunked talking points are reiterated. But what if I told you that that was the reaction? What if I told you that there was a gigantic swath of people, all those people that make sure when they go to get their 20-minute oil change, when they go to the hospital, when they go to the restaurant, that they request the person turn on that channel because they feel that to this day and specifically before, that these were the reasons that they were being unfairly maligned. They were being fed an imbalanced diet. And now they can finally get the things that they weren't getting. This is the issue about right-wing media that I feel that left-wing folks don't get. Is that to right-wing folks, they're like, yes, we know this is straight heroin. We know that this is straight dope. We know that we are only getting half of the story. But it works because the rest of the world is only giving the other half. And so I feel like I'm getting a balanced diet, not because I'm only watching this. It's because the rest of the world is singing the other song. Now, is that fair? Is that right? Is that the healthiest way to go about things? No, I don't think so. At least that's not how I live my life. But it's so fascinating to see this description of Fox News. Because I feel like you guys, this is kindred spirits. This is why, exactly what, here, I'm going to read this.
Welcome back. Ditto heads, please allow me to summarize my core problem with the mainstream media. I know, Snurly. Like, with many things, this is more complex. But at its root, this is my grievances. Facts in the drive-by mainstream media become debatable. Only Republicans get negative coverage. Have you ever noticed that? Debunked talking points. And folks, these are easily researched debunked talking points are reiterated ad nauseum. And meanwhile, you, the listeners, become ever more exasperated. Debunked talking points. Sorry, Snurdly, I got off the script. Now, couple this with the fact that now nearly every television is tuned to CNN. Hospitals, restaurants, hotels, nursing homes, the 20-minute oil change, the gym, and the break room. They are all occupied territory by the drive-by mainstream media. And now it is time to fight back.
Thank you so much. Please email in theyoungamerican@gmail.com. theyoungamerican@gmail.com. Music has been provided by Valesco and Trap Killers. You can follow me at Justin R. Young everywhere. A reminder, if you have Amazon Prime, you can support this show by not paying any more money out of your pocket. Google Twitch Prime. Once you've linked a Twitch account to your Amazon Prime account, every month you can go to twitch.tv/JustinRYoung and subscribe to this channel. Even if you never watch me, it's money that is use it or lose it, and I'd love to have it because I'm calling dibs. Also remember bit.ly/WaveWatch. WaveWatch! That's where you go to get tickets for our election night show at the Piano Fight Theater. No, I didn't realize that would take that off. Politics, 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 politics. So come on out, get tickets. Super awesome. All right, that about wraps it up. Remember, folks, some shows talk about politics. Others talk about politics. Still more talk about politics. But this is the only show that talks about ow. Great. I will see y'all next week.
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.